International.
Ici Radio-Canada. This is Canada.
This is Radio Nederland, the Dutch World Broadcasting System in Hilversum, Holland.
You're tuned to Swiss Radio International in Bern.
This is Free China as a presentation of the Voice of Free China, the international service of the Broadcasting Corporation of China.
This is Radio Havana, Cuba.
Broadcasting from Cuba, free territory in the Americas.
This is Radio South Africa.
This is Yugoslavia Radio Belgrade calling.
This is Israel broadcasting from Jerusalem.
This is Radio Pyongyang of the Democratic People's Republic of Korea.
This is the General Overseas Service of the BBC.
Well, hello everyone, and welcome again to another edition of Media Network Plus on PCJ Radio International. I'm Keith Perron. Mobile news. Well, it wasn't that long ago. If you wanted to check up news, well, you had a few ways of doing it. You can either go on the internet or buy a newspaper. If you go back even further, it was the newspaper and television and radio. If you go back even further, it was television, radio, and newspapers. Further than that, radio and newspaper. And before that, of course, newspaper. But in the last probably 10 years, or even less than that, 5 years, mobile devices have been a big source for news consumption. Many broadcasters, such as the BBC, CNN International, ABC News, and many others, all have phone apps. And at a click of the app, you can have access to all their video content, their audio content, and of course, their visual printed content. Now, is it possible that smartphones and other handheld devices are holding a great interest in consumption of news? Meaning, is this making people more interested in news than, say, previously that they were? Well, a new study by the Pew Research Center Project for the Excellence in Journalism looks at the future of mobile news in the United States. And about three-quarters of Australians owning smartphones are also using their phones to download content. We have this story from Richard Adie.
The enormous success of the smartphone over the last 5 years is turning out to have real consequences for the consumption of news. If you can connect to the internet wherever you have reception, then you can find out what's going on in the world. In the United States, the Pew Research Center's Project for Excellence in Journalism has been tracking the rollout of mobile devices and their effects on news consumption. Their latest report, written by Deputy Director Amy Mitchell, has just been released.
Well, we've seen quite an explosion here in the U.S., people with mobile devices. We now have about half of U.S. adults that own either a tablet or a smartphone, so have internet in their pockets, in their hands, in their laps with them continuously throughout the day.
And how many of them are using the technology to get news?
The majority of people that have these devices are getting news regularly on the tablet and also on the smartphone. And we've seen these numbers, even as the population has broadened with the lower cost devices and more options that are available, news has continued to be a prominent way that people use them. It comes in just behind email on smartphones and is actually tied with email on tablets.
And so what effect does that have, or does it have any effect, on total news consumed for those people?
What we've seen in a number of different studies that we've done, and this one builds on this notion even further, is that the more devices people have, the more platforms that they're accessing, the more news they tend to consume. So it's not a matter of replacing what you used to get on your desktop with what you're now getting on your tablet. People are now getting news both places, and by and large say that they are increasing the overall time that they're spending with news.
And is the news sourced from, I suppose, the usual suspects, the big mainstream news media brands?
The majority of people do name a known brand, but there's also, you know, quite a mix of these where you've got 1% naming, you know, a relatively new online-only or startup operations. Aggregators like Flipboard are getting more popular among people. We also see that that people are coming back to brand to a certain degree, particularly on tablets. When we we've asked people why they download a news app, the fact that it came from the news organization that they trusted and that they liked was a primary reason people chose to do that. And when we ask people about how they're getting to news sites, many are going directly to that news organization as opposed to using search.
Right, that's interesting. Though people you say it reinforces some of the news brands, but it means people are using the mobile devices to actually find new pastures, if you like.
Yeah, and we actually see that there are almost two audiences for a news organization, particularly on tablets, where you have your legacy audience that has followed you over from your legacy brand, be it print or cable broadcast or network broadcast. They're now also finding you on their mobile devices. But there's also a strong cohort of new audience, of people that's coming across you in this new environment and deciding that you're an organization that they want to come back to on a regular basis. And that's both an opportunity and a challenge for news organizations, because these two audiences often have different interests or different needs. Your legacy audience may be more interested in having the content that's more similar to what they're used to seeing in print, whereas the new technology-based audience wants the bangs and bells and whistles.
Actually, they're going to want quite different things, which is going to pose questions or challenges for the news providers, and I might come on to that in a minute. But the thing that I suppose immediately occurs to me is that the legacy audience is more likely to essentially use a web browser to go to the website, even if it's the mobile version, whereas the newer audience and the more tech-savvy audience is more likely to go to the app.
Well, we've seen overall, I actually don't know. I have to look at those numbers and see if it's the new audience that's going to browsers. But but what we do see is that, by and large, browsers have gained in popularity in terms of the way people are accessing news. There's actually more people getting to news on their tablets and on their smartphones via a browser than through an app. And the number of browser users has actually grown over the last year. At the same time, though, we see that people that do use apps, either in combination with the browser or primarily use apps altogether, tend to be more engaged, more active, consume more news, are more likely to spend money subscribing to news. So they do bring a special appeal to these organizations.
It does have real implications, though, doesn't it, Amy? Because, as you will be very aware, apps have been held up for some years now as perhaps the great hope of the future for news providers. But this research seems to say it's not that simple.
Well, I think that's right, that it's not that simple. It's not necessarily that it's not a positive or that apps are out the window. I think the takeaway may be more is that the potential that apps bring, whether it's technically an app in the same sort of programming format that apps were originally designed, or if it's using HTML5, or if it's an HTML5 icon that you save on your screen. There's all kinds of different programming and software that's available now to develop content in a similar way to what people saw when they went through an app. And so I think the opportunity there for news is, what can we do in this new realm, whether it's actually inside this little button we call an app, or whether it's an icon on HTML5, or something else altogether that gets developed.
I suppose as more young people who haven't got an actual physical newspaper reading habit, but have got an interest in the world and a curiosity, and perhaps are now considering a digital-only subscription, as they grow older and there's more of them, and as they move, as that cohort moves through, there is a possibility that there will be more digital subscriptions.
Well, absolutely, and I think that's where the hope for many news organizations lay, and what people are thinking about, and it goes along with some of the behavior trends that we see on the way people consume news on a tablet, and that is coming back to more long-form reading, more of a sort of a smart, relaxed reading that's done because I'm interested in it. When we ask people about the longer articles that they tend to read on their tablet, far more than having it be something for work or something that somebody recommended and said they should read. It was because I was personally interested in this. So people are doing this kind of reading because they want to and because they enjoy it. And if you're bringing that kind of relaxed, interested attitude to this news consumption, it opens up a whole lot of doors that did not exist in what we originally saw in the desktop laptop era of digital.
Well, speaking of the desktop laptop era, I know you also looked at how whether people are still using those for news, and they really are.
They are, absolutely. And as I said at the beginning, it's not that people are giving up one for another. People tend to be using their desktop to a large degree for news, and in many cases saying that they're still getting most of their digital news on the desktop.
I suppose that is largely because most of us go to work and turn on a computer. That's where it is.
Well, that does make sense. Until our workplaces get rid of our desktops, right?
Yeah. All right, well, listening to you today, the things that are coming through are that more people are adopting mobile technology. More than half of those people are using it to access news. So news has a continuing appeal to us, but there's still this resistance to paying for content at all, and especially on a mobile device. What do you think the implications of your findings are?
Well, it's a question of implications for whom. I think clearly we see that there is going to be a change, permanent change, in how news is consumed and how people are accessing news and how people are enjoying news and sharing news and when people are getting news. That this digital technology and mobile technology is here to stay. We've got 3/4 of people that have a desktop or laptop computer, and that number has stabilized. So the gap between the desktop, laptop, and the mobile is narrowing very, very quickly here in the U.S. At the same time, the question of how news organizations are going to financially support themselves remains a very serious one, with a lot of questions about how that's going to occur. One of the other elements we had in this study was we did ask people about advertising. And there's some sense of opportunity there in that people tend, about half of the tablet and smartphone news users say that they do notice ads, sometimes at least, on their tablet or on their smartphone. And though they click on them less and they, you know, buy things from them even less, there may be an opportunity there for creative ways of engaging with consumers in these devices.
Thank you very much for joining us today.
Thank you.
Amy Mitchells, Deputy Director of the Project for Excellence in Journalism, which is part of the Pew Research Center in the US. Of course, Amy Mitchell's talking about America. What about here? Well, we don't have an exact analogue of the Pew Center study, but Marissa Mayo McKay from Complete the Picture Consulting has just finished a report on how we use our mobiles for the AIMIA, which is Australia's Digital Industry Association. 3/4 of us now have a smartphone. But are we using it to find out the news? Marissa Mayo McKay.
In terms of daily use, so we captured frequency of use. Daily use, we had 40% or just over 40% of those people were accessing news on a daily basis. And in the last year, so, you know, in some regard they captured it or trialled it in the last year, we had 80% or 81%. So you can see that we've got quite a substantial number using it daily already. But 80% are at least trialling it in some form in the last year.
And I think the people who are most addicted, there's about 8% of people who are on it 5 times a day. They're people like me, that the true junkies.
That's correct. And I think it just becomes an integral part of the way we operate. We can't help getting our smartphones out. I'm a bit like that as well. And, you know, we just check the news, get that news update, etc. So it is becoming part of the way some people live. And they're really, I suppose, your high-level lead users groups. And I think the rest will follow. It just takes a little while to get the mass moving in that same direction.
Marissa, when we say news, can we be more specific about what kind of news? I know you've treated sport and weather separately, but is news the latest thing that Angelina Jolie is doing, or is it what's happening in Afghanistan?
It really is left open to the interpretation of the respondent. They have a whole list of different types of information services. So really the intent behind the word news was the latest information in terms of what you would see in terms of, you know, current affairs, Channel 9, Channel 7, ABC, etc. So it's more the up-to-date events is the intent behind news, but we can't really say for certain how people interpret it. But given the range of services, information services that are listed, we can be pretty comfortable that it relates to that general sense of news rather than, I suppose, the celebrity entertainment type news, which is captured separately in the report.
All right. Well, I hope you're right. Now, how are we doing this? Are we using the smartphone to go to a web browser, or are we using apps?
A combination. I mean, we don't separate out purely, but what we did capture, for example, is do people use websites more than apps, or apps more than websites, or both roughly the same? And I think contrary to some views that are out there, what we're finding is that people are actually using both websites and applications. And that's, you know, regardless of whether or not it's a tablet or a phone, they're actually using both. So it's not either or at this stage of development in the market. It's very much using both.
Okay, well, here is, I think, the critical question, especially from the industry perspective. How many of us are prepared to pay?
The figure isn't very high at the moment. So we captured payment in terms of applications. So we had around 87%, almost 90% of smartphone owners who had actually downloaded an application. And of that, we had, I think, around 74%, almost three quarters of those said they downloaded a news and weather app. But of that group, only 12% are actually paying for it at this point in time. So you can see that really the whole idea of payment is still fairly new to people.
All right. How does this break down demographically? Because I'm sure that some of us are greater users than others. Firstly, are men or women more likely to do this?
We haven't broken it down by gender. I mean, the reality is we've got such a huge pool of data, we can cut and dice it in so many different ways. What we have done, however, is looked at it according to geotribes, which is just a way of segmenting it based on life cycle, stage of life cycle, and also based on socioeconomic status. And looking at it that way, we found that the lead user group is really your career-orientated singles and couples. They're the ones that are earning lots of money, spending lots of time at work, usually professionals. They're really leading the way, probably followed by your established, very affluent, mature family, so your really rich group of people. And the groups like your middle-class families with older children, and even your white-collar post-family pre-retirees, so those where the kids have flown the coop, what we're finding is that they're not taking it on board as much. So there's a much lower proportion of your older and middle-income groups that haven't embraced it yet, as opposed to those real career-orientated singles and couples and the very rich families with much older children.
You must have. I know your job is to do the research and then do some interpretation, do some analysis. But I mean, for people listening now who are in the news business, what are the implications, do you think?
I think there's a couple of key takeaways, and I suppose one of them is that the mobile phone, be it obviously smartphones are going to be everywhere very, very shortly because that's all that's sold. But we can't look at the smartphone as the only device, or we can't see the tablet as the only device. It has to be an integrated cross-platform approach, and there has to be a lot of hand-holding with the listeners and consumers. So they have to actually hand-hold them through that process so they understand what they can access on the mobile phone, what they can access on a tablet. So it has to be integrated. It has to be a cross-platform. These are only devices. They're only means of delivering content. Content still has to be quality, and there has to be, you know, each one has to leverage off the strengths of that device, but they have to be related. And I think what we have to remember is that there has to be that hand-holding and taking people through that process so they understand how they can use those different devices to keep themselves constantly informed.
That was Marissa Mayo McKay, the director of Complete the Picture Consulting. She was speaking there with Richard Ady. You're listening to Media Network Plus, coming to you from PCJ Radio International. Stay tuned. We have more right after this.
The Spectrum Monitor is a monthly electronic magazine covering shortwave, amateur radio, scanning, satellites, Wi-Fi, and vintage radio, which is available for any device capable of opening a PDF file.
Charlie 105, reduce speed to 22 knots.
Speed 220, Charlie 105.
The Spectrum Monitor also covers amateur radio satellites, maritime and military monitoring on shortwave, reviews of receivers, scanners, and software used for shortwave, and more. Annual subscriptions for 12 issues is only $24, with individual monthly issues available for $3 each. If you're already a subscriber, you can renew your subscription by clicking on the Sign Up for 2015 button. MasterCard, Visa, Discover, and PayPal are accepted. For more details, visit our website at www.thespectrummonitor.com.
Hi, my name's Colin Newell, and I'm the editor and creator of DXR.ca. Since the mid-90s, DXR.ca has been the go-to website for timely resources for the DXR, SWL, and broadcast listener. If you're looking for unbiased reviews of the most modern receivers and antennas, or are interested in participating in some of the more lively online forums all about radio, then come on by. DXR.ca, a world band radio website.
The British DX Club is one of the world's leading DX clubs, with hundreds of members both in the UK and around the globe. BDXE produce a comprehensive monthly magazine called Communication, covering all aspects of the DXing hobby. The BDXE Audio Circle is also available and is a monthly program of DX catches and general chat about radio. For more information, please write to the British DX Club, 10 Hemdean Hill, Caversham, Reading, RG4, 7SB in the United Kingdom, or visit the website at www.bdxc.org.uk. That's www.bdxc.org.uk.
And you're listening to Media Network Plus, coming to you from PCJ Radio International. Many people from time to time do question the ethics of broadcasters. This is a story that was sent to us from Tarmo, our good friend in Estonia, and it involves a radio station in Denmark. Now, many people will say, for example, oh, our local radio station here just went to the lowest common denominator of all time and did the lowest thing possible on air. Well, I think that this station in Denmark actually takes the cake. Now, this is the story that was published on the BBC. A radio presenter in Denmark has killed, listen to this, yes, has killed a baby rabbit live on the air, provoking listeners to campaign for a boycott. The 24/7 presenter was hosting a debate on animal welfare and said that he'll carry out the killing to demonstrate the hypocrisy of animal campaigners who eat meat from supermarkets. Owen, a 9-week-old rabbit, was hit 3 times over the head with a bicycle pump by Asker Juni. The rabbit apparently twitched several times before dying. Mr. Juni says he wanted to see whether he had become so attached to the rabbit by the end of the debate, he said he wouldn't be able to kill him. Lindsay Kessler, an activist who had been part of the earlier discussion, talked her way back into the studio to try to save Owen. She chased Mr. Rooney around the table, but did not manage to rescue the rabbit. He has since taken the animal's carcass home and has skinned it with his children, who are aged 6 and 8. They're planning to eat the rabbit for dinner. Now, this is one of those very... I can't even place why a radio station would actually do this on air. Now, some people have been saying, did he really do this, or was just some type of publicity stunt? Well, as they say, the jury is still out on that. As this story develops, we will bring you an update. Just a quick footnote. Last year, you may remember, in Denmark, a baby giraffe named Marius was killed in front of children at the Copenhagen Zoo before being fed to lions. Now, that, of course, was talked about worldwide in the media, but this rabbit one is a little peculiar, to say the least. I suppose that some people might be getting ready to have some Hassenpfeffer. Anyway, now let's take a look at what's happening propagation-wise and what we can expect over the next 7 days. Here's our propagation editor, Glenn Hauser.
Keith, the global HF propagation forecast from IPS in Australia through May 30th. Normal to fair at low latitudes, fair at middle latitudes, fair to poor at high latitudes. Space Weather South Africa through May 30th calls for magnetic conditions to be quiet to unsettled. Shortwave fadeouts unlikely, MUF stable. From Met Office UK through May 31st, solar activity likely to remain low. Geomagnetic activity unsettled to active May 29th and 30th, but with only a slight chance of minor storm conditions. Then quiet or unsettled May 31st. From OK1HH in Praha, Czechia, the geomagnetic field will be mostly quiet on May 30th, June 1st, 4th, 5th, and 12th. Quiet to unsettled on May 31st, June 6th, active to disturbed on June 2nd and 15th. Quiet to active June 3rd, 7th, 8th, 9th, 14th, and 16th. Disturbed on June 10th and 11th. Quiet on June 13th and 17th. SWPC in Boulder expects solar activity to be very low to low, but a chance for moderate levels from May 30th through June 11th. Geomagnetic field unsettled to active from May 30th, June 2nd and 3rd, 7th to 11th, and 13th to 15th, with possible minor storm levels on June 8th and 9th, with ANK indices peaking at 25 and 5. Lowest ANK indices of 5 and 2 on May 31st, June 1st, 4th, 5th, and 6th. Solar flux rising from 90 May 29th to a peak of only 125 June 4th and 5th, and down to 90 again by June 16th. Bill Hepburn's VHF UHF DX maps show tropospheric ducting extreme between Korea and China the morning of June 2nd. Yet again, extreme all around the Arabian Peninsula as far as India all week. And intense around southeastern Texas the morning of June 1st.
Thanks a lot, Glenn. I should remind our listeners that starting this week, or actually tell you for the very first time, those listening this week in Cambodia on FM will be able to catch Glenn Hauser's World of Radio in a couple of minutes from now. Those who are listening to other stations will stay tuned because your station will be carrying some other programming as well. Anyway, on behalf of the whole team here at PCJ Radio International, I'm Keith Perron wishing you well. So long, take care. 73 and 88 to the ladies.